Little show of hands, please. Who has here been less than 5 times? Yes, you're the one here the first time. I remember that. Okay, less than 10 times. Okay, that's 4. Because yeah, I was thinking about going a little bit more into the depths of the Buddha's teaching, and I think it's a good opportunity because most of you have been here quite a few times. And well, obviously, in the beginning, I'm supposed to talk about meditation. Something that was a little bit sad, actually, last time I was here, two people came up to me with questions, and I asked before if anybody had any questions, and they didn't ask their questions in the group because they were too shy or whatnot. Sort of, oh, it was a stupid question, but they weren't stupid questions at all. So if anything comes to your mind, please don't hold back. That's is often very valuable for all of us, actually, if something can be explained in more detail. So one of the I usually have my own style of meditation, and it might get a little bit boring, so I just bring up that question I was asked that I remember. Because you can obviously do very different styles of meditation as well. And that was, that particular person asked me about counting. Just calming the mind down with 1, 2, 3, 4, or 1 to 10, however long you can keep your mind on the numbers. And then you just start all over again, and you can do it 1 and in breath, and 2 and out breath, or you can 1 in breath, out breath, 2 in breath, out breath, 3 in breath, out breath, whatever feels more comfortable to you. And that is obviously a method of just focusing the mind a little bit more on a particular subject. And some people, they get uncomfortable if they focus too much on their body in their meditation. They sort of it's like I explained before, it's, if we become more aware of our body, sometimes we get more aware of what is not pleasant in our bodies, and so they get agitated, and some they get disappointed or even a little bit frustrated, because instead of feeling joy in their meditation, what they heard about, what it's all about, of blissing out, slipping off your seat, it's basically just a more intense experience of boredom and uncomfortableness. And so to take the mind away from that, counting is definitely something you can do. But I still would like you to keep in mind, I just, what came to my mind was that guy, I don't know if you remember him, in Germany he was Graf Zahl. I think in English it was even a better pun, I guess it was the Count. You remember that guy? He looked a little bit like a vampire and lived in that castle, and he was basically 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 10, and then basically there was this thunder and lightning, and and so actually, if you have so much fun counting, it's a beautiful thing, you know? But if you sit there and 1 and 2, and oh, another thought comes in, actually, and sort of, oh, and you pull your mind back towards, still be aware of your attitude. Have fun with it if you're counting. Huh? If you're counting, then bring your mind nicely back to your numbers. Huh? Make it something fun. If counting is not your thing, you can do another method. You can visualize a color in your mind. If you're a visual person, an art person, huh? You could visualize your favorite color. Yeah? Close your eyes and just have the color, make that color as brilliant and as pleasant and lovely as you can in front of your inner eye. Huh? That's this some people do that with open eyes, and then they call it this casino message, and they have these different tablets with different colors or whatnot in front of them. So they basically just watch that color and just stay with that color. Yeah, because they, if you enjoy colors, great, beautiful for you. Yeah, it's important to keep that in mind, that you don't have to. They're all just methods for calming the mind, keeping, bringing the mind into a happier place, where it feels relaxed, and where it's in an area where it's interested in what it is doing. So if it's colors for you, beautiful. If you're less a visual person and you like to deal with emotions, you can do the Harry Potter method. So for Harry Potter to defend himself from the Dementors, from these sort of spirit things that were sucking out all the happiness out of you, he had to bring up the Patronus charm. And the Patronus charm was a charm you had to stick with one of your happiest memories, and make that very, very strong in your own mind. So basically it was an exercise in remembering a beautiful situation in your past. Something that comes to mind, and you can stick with it, and that you can think around it, you can think about the circumstances, how it came about, and then you really try to recreate that strong feeling of elation, happiness, contentment, gratitude, whatever it was. Huh? So it's another very valuable method, because you create a beautiful mind state. Huh? You create a mind state where the mind is inclined not to manipulate, because it's already closer where we all want to be, in that realm of happiness. Huh? So another valid method. Huh? Or loving kindness, or just kindness, just bringing up kind thoughts in your mind. And we can try to do a session like that. I don't do that very often in my own meditation, so I can try to do that with you tonight and myself. Just bringing up a very wholesome mind state to start with. And please, every time you start your meditation, make sure that you remember that it's often with our normal worldly mindset, it's not good enough to just sit down and see what happens. Because often the mind is just too if it's agitated enough, sometimes just sitting down and, oh, I don't have to do anything for 5 minutes can be enough to bring up some happiness. But often if we have a schedule, that was the second question, sort of should I have particular times for my meditation? I think I have to have particular times for my meditation, otherwise I'm not going to meditate. Especially if you do that, because then your mind might not be in the mood for meditation. Every time now you get up, have your coffee, and then you sit for I don't know how long. So obviously you cannot be every morning in the same mood that you are going to enjoy your meditation. So especially under these circumstances, if you think that you have to have particular time periods where you try to meditate, make sure that you bring up enough joy. Bring up enough joy at the beginning of your meditation, and try to sustain that joy. Before you even try to stop with the manipulation, stay with something wholesome, with something that is interesting. And like I said, numbers or your color or a particular feeling. Or you can be inventive and you maybe figure out something else for yourself, which is staying at least with an object or in a particular realm. It can be one or two objects if one object is too boring. It can be the numbers and your breath together, or the color and your breath together, or loving kindness and contemplation around loving kindness. But just make sure that you maybe not drift too much into areas that are not concerned with your meditation object. Otherwise, it's just going to become a big thinking session again. Actually, no? So most of you have you meditated before? Yes, as well. So basically, you all know what to do, and I usually give the instructions. But most of the people, you do what you want to do anyway. So basically, just count away or visualize away or whatever. I try to do loving kindness meditation today. See how that works. I don't do that very often. In at least not vocally. So it always makes it a little bit something different if you have to speak. So if you're all ready, just let's go and see where it goes. Well, obviously, first loving kindness thing is sit comfortable. Make sure that you can breathe very relaxed. And you all know how to put your body that you don't have to worry that you're gonna damage anything for that half an hour. It's so comfortable that there's not a single worry about that. So let's see if we can stick with which what Rachel said about bringing some more peace into the world. And just contemplate the beauty of sitting in a group of people who are all trying to walk on a wholesome path and trying to bring more happiness into their own minds and into other people's mind. And what a rare thing it is because sometimes I forget in the monastery because I have it every day how rare it is. So Rachel just reminded me, and just having that opportunity of sitting in a group and sharing a certain interest together. An interest that is remote from the interests of the world. It's not about accumulating more. At least not material things. Accumulating more peacefulness, more inner happiness. People in the room here accompany us for that short time on our journey in that direction of making the mind wholesome. We just chanted, whatever living beings they may be, whether weak or strong, omitting none, we just can include them all. We're all on that journey And often our difficulties are not so strange and far away. Struggling often with similar things than our neighbors, the person next to us. Can just bring up that gratitude that we're not completely alone in that endeavor. There are people right here sharing our interests. So what is the best thing that I can do? When do I work the best? When I can, my actions have the best consequences. That is when I am at my best, when I'm calm, when I'm happy. So that's exactly what we can wish for ourselves now. May I be well and happy. May I be well and happy. May I be well and happy. now to you, my fellow meditators here in this room. May you all be well and happy, free from affliction, full of kind thoughts, full of wholesome feelings, you for going together in that direction of peacefulness. Having interest in kindness. Having interest of working with your own minds. Thank you for increasing the strength of my own practice by going in a similar direction. Now let's send some kindness to the people suffering here in the hospital, of physical afflictions or mental afflictions or both. Send them a good wish. May they get better. May they be free from suffering. And even if their body is afflicted, may their mind be free from affliction. then we can spread this bubble of goodwill even further out through Armadale. And it's not concerned anymore if people deserve it or not. It's just general good wishing, well wishing. Like we wish to be free of suffering, we can just wish this goodness outwards. Radiate effortlessly over whole Australia, and then it doesn't even find boundaries for people in different continents, because it doesn't matter how they react. That kindness is always universally welcome. Spread it around the whole globe. Unconditioned. May all beings be well. May all beings be free of suffering. May all beings be well. May all beings be free of suffering. Probably one of the most wholesome and guileless thoughts possible. Now we can just let this little bit of effort fade by itself into happy contentment. You can just stay with that. So kind and full of goodwill. You don't need the slightest manipulation anymore. You're just on safe ground. gonna ring the bell 3 times, and after the 3rd gong, we end the meditation for tonight. So obviously, if you become skillful with that method, the aim is to evoke a very, very strong feeling, and it really feels like something spreading out from your chest region. At least that is how it is for me. If I can make it powerful, it's skillful. And sometimes obstacles come into my mind, like if you hold a little bit of a grudge towards somebody or what, or to you heard something on the news or whatever, and it's sort of but not these guys or whatnot. They're just too crazy. They should rot in hell. If it's not that extreme, then it's basically some sort of doubt seeping in sometimes. And it doesn't get quite powerful. There's this unconditional thing. This is just being convinced that is the only safe and wholesome place in the mind. This unconditional kindness. If there's still resentment, then there's still conflict in the mind. If there's still doubt about some people or groups, or even if humanity is worth it of wishing them well or whatnot, sort of doubts, then that's obviously not unconditioned loving kindness. So sometimes we have to start quite small and stay with the smallness for a long time. If you have one person that you love, actually, maybe you have to stay with that person for a long time. Or if you love yourself, at least, actually, stay with yourself for a long, long time. Make that very, very strong. And when it's strong enough, then you can just spread it outwards more and more. Okay. Or you have to start with an object, or Ajahn Brahm's little kittens, or whatnot. And sometimes we have that feeling, I don't love anybody. Don't know for myself. Ooh. It's all crap. all idiots. I hate you all. So we have to basically be skillful in our own minds and stay with what we can love in that moment. And on if it's the cup of tea or whatever, it doesn't really matter. Can develop incredible gratitude and loving kindness towards that cup of tea, and the feeling is the feeling is the feeling, it's the same feeling. Can spread that out Or basically, you don't have to spread out anything. Basically, it just, if it's strong enough, it just flows out. It just shares itself. It's uncontainable if you make it strong enough. And that makes it then even stronger, because it's you feel that there is an unconditioned safe quality behind that, if that is really strong, if you manage that. And then it also becomes very clear why the five precepts are so important. It's just this, if there's still doubt in your own guilelessness, then there will always be problems in the meditation. If there's still doubt, is a sort of am I a good enough person, whatnot. So if you know you don't wish anybody harm for a long, long time already, that is great. That is a very safe place. That is if you can't be sure of anything anymore, then if you have that is really, really your safety net. I don't wish anybody bad for a long time. I'm not always perfect. I still get angry. I do stupid stuff. But I haven't wished anybody anything really bad for a long time. Very, very, very beautiful and safe area if the mind is in doubt about oneself. So, and I hope that you over time just become more confident in that. And just
I was just going to have a question. What if someone in conversation, they say, I wish someone had died, or I wish rather than dead or something, and then I always feel like I should say something kind or something to them, or I don't know, I can't work it out. Like, it makes me feel awful too, but I don't know my responsibility in that.
Well, I see my responsibility always in not aggravating the situation, If that person is so agitated already, then they usually don't want to hear anything that is in opposition to their own view. So,
Muslims the general
Ramadan. Yeah, often the best thing is basically to often a distraction. Pulling away from that subject, or it really is often a feeling for the situation, basically how you react, But you always just look after your own mind, Make sure your own mind doesn't get agitated now, and you're gets infected with hatred or whatever. Just you keep that peaceful, and that is often the only thing you have to look after. And then even if the person reacts in a way that you think, I didn't do the right thing, sometimes afterwards they come basically and say, oh, thanks that you stayed cool in that moment or whatnot. So even the best thing you can do is you keep your own mind as wholesome as you can in that situation. You don't have to correct the person, If you live a good life, you correct the person by your example much more, like with children, Parents always think, I have to teach my children this and that, but then they cheat and they shout and they're angry and whatnot, and then they're so surprised that their children pick up all these characteristics or whatnot. But I taught him basically you shouldn't shout and he shouldn't do this and that, but you never lived it, basically. And if you live kindness and peacefulness as good as you can, that's the best thing you can do in any situation. Yeah?
But should you never get involved if you see someone's very unhappy? Say, I've got an older sibling, brother in his early 80s, who has had a lot of sadness in his life. His wife died very early and his son died very early of cancer. But he really is a grumpy old man now, and he's pushed all and even his children away by just being negative, and you just think, you know, do you sit back and not get involved and just do your own thing, or you say, well, I really think you need some happy pills or to do something, you know, go to the doctor, because it's not a way to live, because he's not happy, obviously.
But if, I mean, the Buddhist approach is basically we don't run around preaching, because it's just the futility of it, you know. If somebody has their opinion already, and it might not be a happy opinion, but it can be very, very strong.
But when it's somebody that you love, it's not just an acquaintance and it's easier to keep quiet. You know, people can think what they want to, but you just see this person is really troubled. You say, well, hello, you know, maybe you can do...
Well, you obviously, what is the best thing you can do for a troubled person? Just even your willingness still hanging around with him is basically an act of kindness, because hanging around with a grumpy old man is difficult.
Yeah.
So hanging around with a depressed person is difficult. So basically it depends on your kindness and strength in each and every situation, actually, to even bring a different perspective into his life. If he can take it, then. Or whatnot. That's not up to you. You just do your best in the situation to keep your own calm and your kindness and not get involved in that negativity. And that sometimes takes a lot of effort. Huh? Because negativity is contagious, same as laughter, actually. Yeah? So you can feel that sometimes some people, they drain you. You know, you feel your own effort, basically, keeping your mind wholesome. And then... for me, always my looking after myself kicks in as well. I have to know to what point can I be still helpful to that person, and at what point do I just want to be helpful but can't be anymore, because basically I get infected and grumpy now as well. Just out of an ideal of being a good person or whatnot, mess up the situation even more. So. If you have a strong mind, if you have a lot of kindness in that moment, beautiful. If you can bring it over to him, you know. If he can't take it, and if you feel your own kindness diminished enough for the time being, you have to get out of there again. That is the way it is. I mean, in Buddhism, is also you're the owner of your karma, so you're the owner of your actions. Huh? So I have to look after my own actions, and if he was aware enough, he would look after his own actions as well. But a lot of people are not aware enough to see if I'm a critical, grumpy, old, negative fart, people are not attracted to me, actually. It's hard to be around me. But they justify that behavior and because of circumstances or whatever in front of themselves, and so still believe everybody has to put up with it. And I think it's also completely okay to say then basically sorry, but now actually I feel overwhelmed actually by your negativity and I need a bit of space or whatnot. You can give a feedback, but keep it wholesome. As long as you keep it wholesome in your own mind, you have at least a chance that something comes across, you know. If you go on if you try to work with him on a negative level, on his level, then obviously nothing can come across. Because we don't, even if something is right, if it is brought across in a mean or in an angry manner, we cannot take it. That's impossible. So as long as you bring your message across with as much goodwill, not I want to correct you or whatnot, yeah, or I know so much better, but basically out of concern and goodwill. And then it's basically still completely up to him if he takes it or not. But you know for yourself in your in your next meditation, I have done the best I can.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, wanted to talk a little bit. What time is it now? Yeah? Was there anything? No. Okay. You just. Copy.
Can I make a request?
Yeah, sure.
You mentioned the five precepts.
Yes.
Could you mention them a little bit more if that's possible, because we've got the Waysak celebration for new Buddhists coming up.
Okay.
And some of the group have been invited to join if they wish, but they don't know what the five precepts are.
Oh, well, that is very bad.
We don't often get them mentioned.
So the first one is obviously not killing, and it's in Buddhism, basically, it's not about human beings, it's basically is not killing living beings. So it's very inclusive, and that's obviously with intention. We cannot avoid sometimes that we step on things, or we breathe in countless viruses, bacteria, spores, and whatnot with every in-breath, and our body is killing them automatically. Luckily, otherwise we would all be dead now. So it's part of the game here that is killing is involved, but we keep our intention wholesome. And if you meditate, you become very clear of what that means. Just this non cruelty towards living beings. As it is interesting that a lot of people who are afraid of insects, for example, spiders and whatnot, they're usually the ones smashing the spiders. Huh? Oh, a spider! And without thinking, actually, is the book is on top of it already, and it's a big pile of goo. Huh? So, and I'm not afraid of spiders at all anymore. And that is not because I'm such a brave person or whatnot. It's just because I haven't had a harmful thought towards an insect for a long time. I cannot even imagine that any spider comes along and wants anything from me. Huh? If a spider crawls over me, then it's just like, how would that little creature even think about biting me or doing something to me? Huh? It's completely out of my perception. It's just not in the picture anymore. And that is just with this harmlessness of not harming any living being. Huh? If I have a tick, I still pull the tick out. Huh? But I'm not going to go die. I pull it out, and if it dies, it dies. I'm still going to protect my body, actually. But I don't want to kill the tick. I pull it out, and most of the times I survive, actually, and then I chuck it back into the forest. And it's just you. It's not so much for the creature. It's just the way I protect my own mind. Huh? You see, this harmlessness becomes a very important factor in your meditation. Because if some people, they do meditation retreats, and stuff comes up and they get overwhelmed and they go crazy or whatnot, huh? At least temporarily insane. And then they just don't have this beautiful refuge in their own harmlessness, because at certain points in your life, all the certainties we have, they can be washed away, huh? And nothing is stable anymore. Nothing is there to grasp, and all your family, friends, and your possessions and whatnot, that becomes so uncertain. But this innocence, that goodwill. I don't wish anything bad for any creature. No creature has to fear me for such a long time. This is a very powerful concept. Yeah?
What would be your opinion if you came across some kind of animal that was suffering?
Well, I pulled the a flower pot to sweep behind the flower pot in the monastery. And I didn't see it, and unluckily there was this frog hiding somewhere underneath that flower pot, and I basically ripped his whole lower part off, actually. And that obviously was really awesome, really awful. No, it really felt. I'm recording. That's why I do it. So, it was sort of a shock, because it's sort of, that's the last thing you wish, obviously, for yourselves. If somebody maims you, but then you struggle. What are you gonna do now? Huh? And then I think, okay, it's really shitty for that frog now, but I don't know if he wishes me now to take a stone and smash his head in, basically, you know. It's sort of our concept is not, oh yeah, he's suffering, I have to eliminate his suffering or whatnot, but I couldn't quite see it clearly enough that I wanted to do that, because that were always, obviously, that were the last few moments of his life. Maybe there was a bit, a great endorphin rush through his body, he didn't even feel that his legs were off or whatnot, and he was... And I would just end that then with another action of brutality, which is also not very nice, smashing somebody's head in or whatnot. And then it's a conscious act of me of killing somebody. So basically I tried to put him in a spot where he was relatively safe from ants and whatnot, and let him be, actually. Yeah? I don't know what I would have done if he asked me, you know. If the frog was able to ask me and say basically, oh, please end it, or whatnot, you know.
If it was a larger animal, then it was carrying on, it was going to be that way for quite a while.
Mm. I don't know. I think it's a decision you really have to make in that moment. And if you come from complete compassion, it might be all right in your own mind. But I cannot be 100% sure. I can just watch over my own mind, and I didn't feel comfortable, basically, of ending that creature's life in that moment. If it's a bigger animal and it's obviously in intense pain or whatnot, then you would maybe you want to react differently if you have the opportunity. But obviously something completely different if you want to end suffering because out of compassion, or if you end a creature's life just out of inconsiderateness, you know, just or because it annoys you a little bit, or because you have some weird fear which is not even justified. So I don't think this disputes this fact of harmlessness that you can still have behind that concept. You know, your intention is not to harm. If your intention is very pure, of really you have the feeling that is the best thing to end the suffering now, then you will be able to live with that, I'm pretty sure. Yeah? At least it's, I cannot see it karmically being on the same level as killing something out of sport, or even to survive, or whatnot, which is also obviously a different matter if you really kill something to survive. I like that, for example, that was in a movie with this, what was it, The Last Mohican or whatnot, and that Indian shot that, the Native American, he shot that deer, and the first thing he did was bending over that deer and apologizing, basically, that I have to shoot you now, actually, to survive, and one day, actually, my body is going to be in the earth, and basically, it's going to give food to your brothers, basically, and make the grass green again, and whatnot, basically, that you will survive. So that is obviously a different mind state than like the guys in the 1800s sitting in the trains and shooting all the buffaloes from the trains out of sport, or whatnot. Or even depriving the Native American of their food source. So the mind state behind your action is a very important factor in all of your actions. And the more innocent and full of goodwill it is, the safer your ground. Huh? And that is how I deal with the aspect of not killing any living beings. And the second aspect is that we try to be truthful, not to deceive people, which is the coarsest form, deceive people for our own benefit. Yeah? And we just have this trustworthiness that people who know us, they feel safe, their possessions feel safe, obviously then the third one comes in immediately, not breaking into other people's relationships. Huh? They feel safe with us as well, basically, to leave our wife alone with us, or their husband alone with us, or their children alone with us, or whatnot. It's just this strong desire to keep it as honest as I can. Keep it at least in the realm of, I would never deceive you for my own advantage. Sometimes maybe we paint a picture a bit more colorful because we're embarrassed or we don't want to tell the truth about a certain condition of a person or whatnot. If your wife asks you, do I look fat to you or whatnot, you don't say, oh yes, my dear, actually. Because you want to be honest. You want to stay married as well, obviously. So there is some compromises you just make, but you make them out of kindness. Just doesn't have to be because you don't want to be deceitful. If you live together with a person for a long time, I guess they develop something that goes, it should at least, that goes above that physical beauty thing. And then it just becomes less and less important if you gain a pound or lose a pound or whatnot. But I mean, if women ask stuff like that, you always ask for trouble as well. Because do you want an honest answer? Or do you want to be flattered? So make very sure that your intention is right in that moment as well. But I mean, there's obviously guys who ask the same stuff as well. If they look still sexy or whatnot. Well, be ready to receive the truth. If you really ask this sort of questions. But if you tell the truth, always mix it with kindness. Make sure you put it in a way that you can take it yourself, like you want to be treated. And so, yeah, truth. And I mean, that is the not deceiving is obviously the coarsest form. And then if you read it in the eight precepts, the more refined versions that people sometimes keep on the full moon dates in Buddhism, it then explains the five precepts a little bit more thorough, and then it mentions coarse speech, harsh speech, speech not coming from loving kindness, divisive speech, and so it has all this refinements to it. That is a speech that is pleasant for the ear, it says. So obviously in that area I have to work a lot myself. Still, my speech is not always incredibly refined, I have to admit, actually. But at least this, I know that intention. Sometimes I try to be funny and then I'm a little bit coarse, actually. But I know at least for myself it's not that intention of trying to harm or to embarrass. So you have at least that aspect of harmlessness behind it again. And I mean, it's nice if you have that trust, and I hope you have that in with your friends and family, just that you can have your possessions lying around and there's not the slightest thought ever with my friends that I don't know, if your money is lying around there's never gonna be a bill missing, you know. I just knew that with my friends. And especially for the relationships, sort of that you feel confident that if somebody is in a relationship, you would never break into that. You know how much that hurts yourself if something like that happens. So you just stay away from that. You just don't fall in love. Basically, if you meditate, you see your attention going in a certain direction. You see when the flirting starts, actually, and you see it's maybe not so harmless. If you watch your mind, you're not just fall into anything. If you have your awareness strong enough, and you have your priorities strong enough, then you just know that is a direction you can cause a lot of harm for yourself and other people. It's very painful. Happened to me as well. If your relationship is threatened by another person, it's very, very painful. So, and you don't wish that pain on yourself, you don't wish that pain on others. And so it comes back to that harmlessness aspect. Listen, you're safe in your meditation, you're safe in your own mind, with your own attitude, with your friends, with your surroundings, because it's you live with people you trust. And that is a completely different atmosphere as with in people in criminal cycles, or if very coarse people and just meet together in the bar and don't know what's going on in their life at all. If you have wholesome friends around you, it's a completely different feeling as with people that you cannot trust. And first of all, obviously, you look after your own mind, that you can trust yourself. So that is the third one, not breaking into other people's relationship. And then the second one was obviously not stealing. The first one is not killing any living beings, the second one is not stealing. And not stealing, more refined, goes so far, not taking what is not given. So basically, if I find a purse on the street, it's obviously not stealing if I take it. But I still, if I'm considerate enough and there are a few $100 inside, maybe it might be the pension or benefit of that person for the whole fortnight or whatnot. So what makes me feel better? If I keep that money and buy myself something stupid, or if I try to locate that person and give the money back and make sure that person is all right? And it is a beautiful example. We have a neighbor, and he never got so well along with us in the monastery. And actually, we found his purse somewhere on our property, and it was there for quite some time. It wasn't that much money in it, or say 20 or 50 bucks or something like that, I cannot remember. But his address and driving license, I think, and whatnot. So basically, we went to some lengths to, because he wasn't living there anymore, we went to some lengths to call at his, his job address was in there. So basically we called his job address and he wasn't working there anymore. But that guy could tell us again that actually he's working somewhere else now and where he lived. So we went to a little bit of trouble to locate him. And at the end of the trouble, it just felt very good. It was just it felt so much more beautiful than keeping that money or making no effort. I just imagined myself basically that a group of people you don't have the highest opinion of, and they go through some effort actually to get you your stuff back that you might have missed, and it just sets such a beautiful example. It's just uplifting. Uplifting for one's own mind. So obviously the cause of all, what we just taking something away from somebody, and the more dear that is to a person, obviously the stronger the negative effect. Sort of stealing from a friend is really tough stuff for the mind. That is because that goes into the area where you not trust yourself anymore. Mm-hmm. That stuff comes up in the meditation, I guarantee you. So if that happened in your life, make sure you work in a different direction, that you become very trustworthy in that direction again. People feel safe and try to make some amends if you have some heavy seething karma going on, whatnot. And it might take some time to get you over that and make yourself, in front of yourself, trustworthy again. And you will see that very clearly in your meditation, stuff like that coming up, just doubts coming up or whatnot. And then always look very closely, what's going on, And then sometimes you see some behavior, some past behavior that wasn't up to scratch. So then you can improve in that direction again. And the five precepts just give you a very, not just basic, it's the five precepts are your safety net. If you don't break the five precepts, you're in a really safe area. Even if something goes, if your whole life goes completely down the drain, you have that safety net. People who go all the way down and don't come up anymore, there's usually something wrong in the moral. Either they're heavy drinkers, they're cheaters, they're drug addicts, and it usually if you're with drug addiction, it goes so very quickly with some heavy drugs, heroin and ice and all that stuff. Now it goes very quickly in the direction where you even start to steal from friends and family. And so you're creating very heavy karma there, we say in Buddhism. Heavy actions with heavy consequences. Not only that your surrounding, even your family mistrusts you, but you lose that confidence to trust in yourself. You cannot see anything out there anymore that is trustworthy because you cannot even have that trust for yourself. There's constant mistrust in your own mind. A very, very dangerous game. And often people cannot see that. They just don't see very clearly that these actions, they have consequences for in the minds of other peoples and in your own mind. So the second one was not stealing, not breaking into a relationship, and then the fourth one is obviously telling the truth, being truthful. And the fifth one of being very, very careful with alcohol and drugs. A lot of our more unwholesome tendencies are held in check by our awareness. If we clear in our mind, we can hold back anger, we can hold back greed that comes up spontaneously. Most of the breaking into other people's relationship, for example, happens when people are drunk. So that is when the danger of these drugs. When the clarity of mind gets lost and then some instinctual behavior just takes over, and a lot of our instinctual behavior is not necessarily wholesome. If it's obviously a sexual desire, then it's indiscriminate. It can be very indiscriminate if there's a strong attraction there, and then it's only our intellectual and our mind and our experience holding us back, thinking the whole thing through. For a little bit of pleasure, I'm gonna have the consequence of having that on my shoulders, that I just deceived my partner, and I deceived my friend maybe with the other partner, because that is the other sad thing. Often this stuff happens with people who know each other. So one couple deceives the other couple, actually, and then you not only have deceived your partner, you also deceive your friend, and you have this burden of lies and insecurities and whatnot. And that often for a relatively short period of time of bit of pleasure and happiness you were yearning for. But the consequences are often very heavy for that. Marriage is breaking apart, friendships ruined. So that can be the consequence of not taking care of your mind, just deluding your mind with drugs or alcohol. But I'm usually the one trying to point out as well, they are not commandments. Be aware, they're precepts to improve your mind. to get you on more and more wholesome ground. They're called training rules. So obviously the point is never to see what you did wrong in your life. The point is what can be improved in my own mind and in my own conduct still. And you just, the clearer one is aware of the danger, but also of the beauty of this harmlessness, of this, like I said last time, the easy Christian version, all encompassing in a way, is what you don't want other people to do to you, you don't do to others. Huh? Or what you want other people to do to you, you do to others. Very, very, very simple. But if you have a little bit of calmness in your mind, you see that that is such a, I always call that a golden string. When the mind can be not sure of anything else, that always feels secure. There's no doubt in that area, because it just, it's guileless. It's safe. And one can feel that it's just a safe area. And if you have that strong in your own life, you're not with all that stuff that might go wrong, that your family dies, or you get a disease or whatnot, and you have to die. That is guaranteeing you a good moment of death as well. The purer that is a strong sense of beauty and confidence in your last moments as well. Just having this confidence that you lived a harmless life as good as you could.
So you know, in the Catholic religion they say if you have confession just before you die, well then you're going to, you know, go to heaven or something like that. But in Buddhism it's more a collection of your whole life.
Well, obviously in Buddhism there is no God who can say basically, now I forgive you for everything. Yeah. And if you look at your own mind, you see it usually doesn't work like that. Huh? You maybe in that moment can feel forgiven, which is a wholesome way to die. I don't say that is not a good thing, that you make your mind or the mind of a dead person as wholesome as you can in that moment. But you're not going to be a different person after death in Buddhism. Huh? You're still exactly the same as you were before, just without a body. Huh? And so it's and then the stuff comes up again, your memory comes up again and whatnot. Huh? And even if you feel forgiven in that moment, that if you were a mass murderer or whatnot, it's going to come up again. You hear the screams again, and more intense than ever before. Huh? Because all the stuff that is hard to recollect in that body actually is on a much more intense and subtle level without a body. So that can really kick in. So yeah, obviously a beautiful thing, make your mind peaceful before death and bring up a happiness as good as you can, but sorry, doesn't work like that. Nobody can forgive you all your sins, basically. We don't call it sins, I just call it unwholesome actions. And there's resonance of that in your own mind. Huh? People, they cannot sleep anymore, actually, if it's getting very unwholesome. Or if they're just very, have high ideals and cannot live up to it, or whatnot. You can get yourself into sickness and all sorts of things already when you live. You live, if you're a criminal, you're going to live in criminal cycles. You're not going to live in a monastery or whatnot. Or you're not going to, and also when you die, or just because somebody said, now you're blessed and everything is forgiven, basically, you have the same character. You're going to be drawn towards the beings that are on your plane, basically, you know, of morality. So you wouldn't even want to be with the guys who are so radiant. It just would feel really uncomfortable. Huh? The same as people who love different stuff, actually they don't want to come to the monastery or whatnot, or they don't want to live with wholesome families or whatnot. They just want to go around and party and do whatever they want or whatever, you know. So this drawnness is not something you change at a fingersnip. Huh? that is tendency, that is really strong stuff, and that is built up for a long, long time. And it's not going to cut off in a sense, actually.